This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
It's part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by your John Deere dealer, the Sloan Implement Company. And with part one of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. We have your grain futures for you from Monday's close on the Chicago Board of Trade. Corn was higher on December's contract, up 2.5 to 373.25. March corn was also up 2.5 to 384.25. May corn was up 2.5 to 392. Soybeans for November were up 9.75 to 892.5. January beans were up 9.5 to 906. March beans were up 8.25 to 917. Chicago wheat for December was down 1.25 to 483. March wheat was down 1 to 490. May wheat was down 1 as well to 494.75. Moving on, soybean meal for October was up $3.40 to 294.50. December bean meal was up 360 to 298.60. And January bean meal was also up 360 to $300.30. Finally, soybean oil for October was down 9 cents to 29.19. December bean oil was also down 9 cents to 29.31. January bean oil was down 8 to 29.56. Now, to recap your closing grain futures from Monday, corn was up 2.5, soybeans were up 8 to 10, wheat was down 1 to 2, soybean meal was up 340 to 360, soybean oil was down 8 to 9 cents. Now we'll move on and take you to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Monday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Monday's report of the grain prices and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were higher on Monday afternoon, with soybeans advancing on rumors of purchase by China later in the week. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shelled corn bids were 1 to 4 cents higher at 327 to 363. Soybean bids were up 10 to 11 cents at 818 to 843. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shelled corn bids were steady to 2 cents higher at 351 to 371. Soybean bids were up 10 cents at 827 to 872. In the southern part of the state, shelled corn bids were mostly 2 to 4 cents higher at 322 to 385. Soybean bids were up 10 to 11 cents at 815 to 853. Illinois soybean processors' cash soybean bids were up 10 to 13 cents at 848 to 883. Basis was unchanged to 3 at 45 under to 10 under the November. High Pro soybean meal on a truck basis was offered at 279.50 to 297.50 per ton, up 340 a ton, with basis unchanged at 15 under to 3 over the October. Illinois corn processors' cash corn bids were up 3 cents at 373 to 388, with basis unchanged at option to 15 over the December. Illinois River Barge loading elevators quoted their producer corn bids up 1 to 4 cents at 351 to 371, with basis mixed at 22 under to 2 under the December. Soybeans ended up 10 cents at 840 to 848, with basis unchanged at 53 under to 45 under the November. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators placed their producer corn bids at up 4 to 6 cents at 365 to 367. These elevators raised their soybean prices 10 to 13 cents, with quotations at 859 to 864. Soft wheat closed down 1 cent at 485 to 486, and Milo ended the day raised 2 cents at 357 to 358. Contract bids to producers for October-November delivery. Corn in the northern part of the state at 329 to 363, soybeans at 816 to 852. Contract bids to producers for October-November delivery in the central part of the state, corn 347 to 371, soybeans at 830 to 872. Contract bids to producers for October-November delivery in the southern part of the state, corn at 321 to 383, soybeans 815 to 853, and June-July wheat at 462 to 493. That concludes our grain report. This is Katie Lemonager with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to Monday's closing livestock futures on the Mercantile Exchange, where everything was higher across the board. Live cattle for October were up 250 to 101.85. December live cattle were up 262 to 107.77. February live cattle were up 202 to 114.10. Feeder cattle for September were up $1.27 to 141.60. October feeders were up 205 to 141.25. November feeders were up 270 to 139.72. Finally, lean hogs for October were up 60 to 60.95. December lean hogs were up 212 to 68.37. February lean hogs were up $1.22 to 75.12. Now to recap Monday's closing livestock futures, live cattle were up 202 to 262. Feeder cattle were up $1.27 to 270. Lean hogs were up 60 cents to 212. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Monday's closing cash livestock report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Monday afternoon livestock report. Starting the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound pork carcass traded 46 cents higher, in range of $39 to $46, with a weighted average carcass price of $44.72. In the Illinois direct sow port, slaughter sow price were steady with moderate demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded at $15 to $19, 4 to 5 weighted at $16 to $21, 5 to 6 weighted at $18 to $24, and over 600 pounds $20 to $26. From the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $25 to $31. Receipts for Illinois barrels and gilts have totaled $39,700. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was steady with 291 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was $69.53, which was $1.56 higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice and select beef carcasses are trading lower. Choice carcasses were $216.45, which is 52 cents lower, while select carcasses were $190.84, which is 88 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 116,000 compared to 117,000 last week and 118,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 454,000 compared to 487,000 last week and 469,000 one year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you this morning by your John Deere dealer, the Sloan Implement Company. Time now for part two of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by the Litchfield National Bank, by CHS, farmer-owned with global connections, and by Seavers Equipment of Hamel, Hillsboro, Greenfield, Carlinville, Auburn, and Jerseyville. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy. And in Ag News for a Tuesday morning, trade talks continue this week between the U.S. and Canada as the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement inches closer to reality. President Trump says the talks last week between the U.S. and China were very positive. Negotiations will continue this week ahead of high-level talks planned sometime in October. A Chinese delegation canceled U.S. farm visits last week, but apparently not because of the ongoing trade negotiations. Officials say the trips were canceled to avoid excessive media attention. Meanwhile, Democrats in the House of Representatives plan to submit a counterproposal to the White House this week on changes to the USMCA, according to Politico. House Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal says the USMCA working group would meet with U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer this week to intensify the discussion. Neal is hopeful the group and Lighthizer can strike a deal soon that allows the House to vote on the agreement. Neal says the concerns raised by Democrats are not resolved, but added the Trump administration has made substantial progress. In other national news, grain quality could be a concern this year. Dr. Charles Herberg is a grain quality expert at Iowa State. Dr. Herberg says this year produced an unprecedented amount of flip-flops in the growing condition. He says this can make predicting grain quality a little more difficult.
We had more flip-flops in the growing season, different conditions in the growing season than I've ever seen, which also means we may not be able to predict the results with as much accuracy as we might like, but that's the way it happened.
A great example of what has made this soybean season hard to predict is the unseasonably late heat, which has led to rapid maturity in fields. This is true even in crops which were planted late in the year.
And I think we're seeing that all of a sudden with this warm weather we've had in the last week or so, that maturity is being reached very rapidly, maybe more rapidly than we might have thought earlier. Even the late planted beans are starting to show turned fields, and I think that's a consequence of the heat at the end of the season.
Dr. Herberg talks about the increase in foreign matter. He says the lack of a full canopy in many fields led to more instances of late emerging weeds.
We're also going to see more foreign material in soybeans this year than perhaps normal because, as we know, we didn't get canopy over the rows, even in some cases, even the whole season. So once the application of Roundup was passed, there was a lot of late emergence of weeds, a lot of water hemp and others, and we're going to see a little bit more foreign material in them.
Herberg also says not to be surprised to see smaller bean size. The late heat and rapid maturity of the plant is the culprit in these cases. However, don't rule out another flip in conditions, which could allow for bean sizes to reach their potential.
If the heat at the end of the growing season here, if that more or less finishes them out quickly, we'll probably see a little bit smaller seed size than otherwise we might have seen because of less time to fill out. Of course, that could change. This weather could flip again, and we still have a little bit more growth on into the later part of the season.
The hardest part of predicting this year's bean crop is nailing down oil and protein content. Herberg says with the changing conditions, it could be anyone's guess.
Oil and protein-wise, everybody asks about that, particularly processors, and quite frankly, this one I'm going to have to say I don't really know. We haven't had this many flip-flops in the season to know what the net impact will be on soybean composition. Usually oil is formed first in the growing cycle and protein second, but beyond that, I'm not sure where we're going to end up.
This could also be the new normal as weather patterns continue to change as of late.
And in fact, the last few years, if you think back in the last few years' growing seasons, we've had something unusual during all of them, and I think that's kind of a hallmark of things to come. The fact that and forecasters are saying we're into a period where weather conditions are more variable more quickly, and in that case, we'll get outside of our experience from time to time.
Again, that was Dr. Charles Herberg of Iowa State University. In other national news, the Department of Agriculture yesterday announced $144 million in rural water infrastructure improvements. The USDA's Rural Development provides loans and grants to help expand economic opportunities and create jobs in rural areas. Through the effort announced Monday, the USDA will fund water projects in 25 states, including Illinois, through 45 projects. The funds are authorized through the Water and Waste Disposal Loan and Grant Program. Eligible applicants include rural cities and towns and water districts. They can use the funds for drinking water, stormwater drainage, and waste disposal systems in rural communities with 10,000 or fewer residents. Deputy Undersecretary of Rural Development Donald Lavoie says modern and reliable water and wastewater infrastructure systems are foundational to economic growth and quality of life in rural communities. One of the projects, an $8.8 million for Winfield, West Virginia, will upgrade its wastewater treatment plant. The USDA has $2.9 billion available for water and environmental program loans and grants at the beginning of the fiscal year 2019. For more information and a list of the funded projects, you can visit rd.usda.gov. Back on September 12th, it was an unusual date for Seth Meyer at the University of Missouri. Until recently, Meyer would spend one morning a month locked away in a USDA office preparing the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report.
When you're in lockup, and it is literally a lockup. You have to hand in your phones, and there are steel doors. And we would go in at 5 in the morning, and it would be nonstop until the release. And the secretary signed today, and you'd be presenting right up until the moment the steel doors opened. So you're right. The difference is here is I got it right at 12 o'clock, but I'm sitting there clicking and refreshing as well and guessing as to what is going to happen just like everybody else.
Instead, the former chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board was in his new office on the University of Missouri campus in Columbia, joining all the analysts, traders, and farm broadcasters in hitting refresh on their browsers at noon Eastern Time. Meyer recently returned to Mizzou to become the assistant director of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. He calls the 6 years spent compiling each monthly WASDE one of the best jobs in the government.
Running the World Ag Outlook Board, you know, we bring together all kinds of agencies from across USDA who make contributions to the process. And for somebody who likes markets and likes going around the world, the day before WASDE and WASDE Day are the two best days of the month. You get to go around the world talking about crops. I'm not sure there is a better job.
Now, as a part of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, Meyer will play a role in putting together the Institute's annual baseline report, which is usually released every March. He says one of the biggest changes is how far ahead the baseline projects.
By working at the WASDE, I'm very much used to thinking about things in 18-month chunks, just go out 18 months. And when you do this type of policy work, it's a bit different. You think about how policies will evolve and how things will reestablish themselves over a period of 10 years. So now I have to think a bit more deliberately about where underlying trends are going, not just what things are happening in the market today, but maybe where things are going longer term.
Meyer says one of the advantages to rejoining the FAPRI is being able to weigh in on policy projections. He'll also be able to restart a forecast he previously compiled.
I used to do yield modeling and publish yields each week, so I'll do that for corn and beans and cotton. I've got a big database of WASDE behavior, so for me this will be helpful in thinking about when we look at the global supply and demand, where do we most often find the big errors that keep uncertainty in place, and how can we resolve those? Where maybe folks should focus resources in terms of shrinking uncertainty in the global market for corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, and then trying to identify some of those areas.
Meyer says the yield forecast will restart sometime next year. In our latest story from the Holstein Association, preparing the next generation of leaders is a monumental task for any industry, but its importance cannot be overlooked, especially within agriculture. That's why the Holstein Foundation is committed to developing new leaders through its Young Dairy Leaders Institute, a program that's been impacting lives for 25 years. The Young Dairy Leaders Institute, or YDLI, sponsored by the Holstein Foundation, believes strongly in developing future leaders for the dairy community. Established in 1994, the program this year celebrates 25 years of inspiring the next generation of industry leaders, advocates, and innovators. YDLI alumni Rebecca Shaw of Pennsylvania.
The Young Dairy Leaders Institute is a group of like-minded people, ambitious people, people from an industry who want to make real change.
Since its start, more than 600 participants have benefited from the YDLI experience, which is a three-phased leadership development program for young adults aged 22 to 45. Katie Agnew of Wisconsin.
The Young Dairy Leaders Institute really takes a look at all different aspects of being a leader. Take a look at collaboration, you look at how do you share your story in a way that is meaningful and purposeful while still putting a face to the dairy industry.
Each phase of YDLI training offers a different focus for participants, including advocacy, personal development, and hands-on learning. The opportunity to build relationships with others is considered YDLI's most valuable and long-lasting impact. Keith Engel of Wisconsin.
There's very few times in your life when you can meet people that you will know for the rest of your life. You do it in school, you do it at church growing up. YDLI is one of those experiences that you meet some friends that I've very much honored to know for the last 20 years.
I love the dairy cow. I love the Holstein breed, but I quickly realized it was the people in the industry that really made it for me. And especially as we go through the highs and lows of the milk cycle, having those connections to the people and knowing that sense of community that everybody's going through together is so critical in keeping our young dairy enthusiasts involved and in the industry.
That was Tara Baker of Michigan. In its 25 years of YDLI, the Holstein Foundation is proud of the strong network representing all corners of the dairy community. With this engaged group at the helm, the future is very bright.
They have cultivated this creative, free-thinking environment for young dairy leaders to thrive, and that has just had a trickle-down effect into how our industry is evolving.
You can learn more about the YDLI program and how to get involved at HolsteinFoundation.org. Moving along now into State of Illinois Ag News, we have the latest state crop progress and condition report for you. And for that, we join Steve Malaszewski with the National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Steve Malaszewski, Deputy Director of USDA NASA's Heartland Regional Field Office. I am reporting on Illinois crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, September 22nd. Temperatures last week averaged 74.4 degrees, 10.2 degrees above normal. Precipitation averaged 8-tenths of an inch statewide, 4 hundredths below normal. There were 5.5 days suitable for field work for the week ending September 22nd, 2019. Topsoil moisture supply was rated 11% very short, 22% short, 59% adequate, and 8% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply was rated 8% very short, 23% short, 62% adequate, and 7% surplus. Corn in the dense stage reached 77%. Corn mature reached 26%, 45 percentage points behind the 5-year average. Corn harvested for grain is 2% complete, 14 percentage points behind the 5-year average. Corn condition was rated 4% very poor, 14% poor, 37% fair, 39% good, and 6% excellent. Soybeans turning color reached 53% this week, 30 percentage points behind normal. Soybean condition was rated at 4% very poor, 14% poor, 39% fair, 36% good, and 7% excellent. This has been Steve Malaszewski with USDA NASA's Heartland Regional Field Office.
Moving on now into other state ag news, farmers generally try to get their taxes in order before the end of the year. This season, they may need to consider MFP and prevented planting payments and how to best make charitable contributions. Todd Gleason has a few tidbits from the Illinois Farm Tax Seminar.
Now, the tax implications of the MFP payments are that the money is taxable in the year it's received. So, for MFP 2, half of the payment has already been or will be delivered shortly. It's expected 25% will be delivered in a second check in November, and if needed, the third check, another 25% of the total, is likely to come in January. The first two checks are taxable in 2019, and the final portion would be taxable in 2020. Another payment farmers may not be used to dealing with involves the prevented planting portion of crop insurance, says Bob Ray.
Those payments are either taxable when received or under certain circumstances could be deferred until 2020, the year after the disaster occurred. So they should visit with their tax professional to determine, especially as we near year end, on whether those should be taken as 2019 income or used under the election to be treated as 2020 income.
Ray presented during this fall's Illinois Farm Tax School seminar. He reminded tax preparers in attendance that farmers also have a unique way to make charitable contributions.
IRS has prescribed some specific steps to validate a contribution with grain. And one of those is that the grain must be delivered to the charity. The charity has to become the subsequent owner of that grain inventory. And then the producer should notify the charity that he's provided X number of bushels in their name at a certain location. The charity then, from that point, takes the risk, makes the sale, and handles the cash proceeds from there.
In simple terms, the producer delivers grain in the name of the charity to the grain elevator, notifies the charity, and then the charity makes the sale. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
In other state ag news, the state fair had a record-setting year. The Illinois Department of Agriculture says that revenues for the 11-day event topped $6.5 million. Fair attendance was more than 500,000. That's at least more than any other fair since 2014. The total number is an estimate, but Illinois Director of Agriculture John Sullivan says that the methods they are now using might just be a little bit more accurate than what was done in years past.
It may very well be an all-time attendance record because some of the way that the calculations of attendance was done over the years, somebody once said, that's how they did it, right? So they put their finger in the air, and that's how they came up with the number.
State Fair Manager Kevin Gordon says they count adult ticket sales and parking, but they use estimations when trying to determine how many kids entered for free and other free event days for veterans and seniors. Moving on now into local events around our area. Don't forget that tomorrow morning will be a Landscaping for Energy Efficient Homes workshop. That'll be held tomorrow morning from 9 till noon at the Extension Office in Hillsboro. Also, tomorrow afternoon from 2 to 3 will be a Dealing with Backyard Wildlife workshop, also at the Extension Office in Hillsboro. And then on Thursday evening will be a Level 1 Beginner Sewing class from 6:30 until 8 on Thursday evening. And that will be held at the Extension Office in Hillsboro as well. That will be the first evening of a 5-week course that will run through October 24th. And in another event at the Extension Office coming up next week, the U of I Extension will be hosting a Nut Trees for Your Home Landscape workshop that will be held again at the U of I Extension Office in Hillsboro. You can join U of I Extension horticulture educator Andrew Holsinger as he presents all the basic concepts for growing nut crops. This program will take place on Thursday, October 3rd from 10 to 11 in the morning. There is no charge to attend this workshop. However, they're asking attendees to please register by next Tuesday, October 1st, so they can have adequate handouts. And you can pre-register by visiting their website, go.illinois.edu/CJMM, or by calling the office in Hillsboro at 532-3941. And that just about wraps it up for this Tuesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us, you can email it to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Tuesday morning, September 24th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.